And the first presentation will be New Digital Correction Techniques, and it'll be presented by Perry Priestley, who has worked in the professional broadcast industry for nearly 30 years. Perry currently is the Vice President of Sales for Thomson Broadcast for North America. Most recently, Perry worked for Linear Industries Vice President in Sales and previously has held positions with Ubiquiti, Thales, Marconi, Varian, and Philips. Perry has presented at technical conferences worldwide. He has worked in many engineering positions from radio and TV development to transmission installation. Perry earned an HND in electrical engineering and a Bachelor of Science in Applied Mathematics from the University of Cambridge in England. Please welcome Perry Priestley.
Well, thank you very much for that introduction. Welcome. First of all, thank you very much for arriving so early in the morning. And although I am a sales manager, a sales director, I will try to keep this very technical and hopefully keep you as awake as possible. As that kind introduction, my name is Perry Priestley, as already mentioned. I'm the Vice President of Sales for Thomson. The paper I will present this morning is called New Digital TV Correction Techniques and New Amplifier Technology. The purpose of the paper is to provide an update on several new techniques intended to improve the operating efficiency of digital broadcast transmitters. The paper is essentially about digital modulators, distortion correction techniques, and RF amplifiers. Fundamentally, the two components, the exciter and the amplifier, determine the quality, the performance, and the efficiency, and ultimately the operational cost of a TV transmitter. Until now, power amplifier design, the fundamental part of a transmitter is the power amplifier design has been a simple trade-off between efficiency and linearity. And linearity relates to performance, and performance relates to coverage. So let's try this, if it works, good. So I'm going to cover some basic subjects, an introduction, to explain why do we want to improve signal-to-noise ratio or performance of an amplifier. I'd like to discuss a little bit about linearization fundamentals and then move on to some new techniques in pre-distortion correction. And then move on to a new subject in terms of amplifier design and some new technologies that are available now for the broadcaster. We are looking at always updating and renewing technology and improving and looking at development of new transmitters. And when looking at a development of a fundamentally a new transmitter, you actually need to come up with a basic concept of why am I doing this? And so these are the three objectives we set in the development of a complete new range of TV transmitters. We wanted to be able to reduce the operating costs of a TV station. And when we say reduce, we mean significantly reduce the operating costs. We want to be able to give the opportunity to increase or at least maintain the coverage within a designated area by setting an extremely high level of performance in terms of signal to noise and modulation error ratio. And we wanted to actually maximize reliability, make the transmitters more reliable, and then consequently provide the a better MTBF. So let's just quickly look at efficiency over time. How green is your transmitter? How efficient, or in fact inefficient is your transmitter? If we're looking at a solid state transmitter that was purchased, let's say prior to the year 2000, we're looking at potentially efficiencies between 9 and 14%. Even with basic digital adaptive pre-distortion correction techniques, there was improvement very little above 14%. So what does that mean? If you have a transmitter operating at 10% efficiency, and it's a 10 kilowatt transmitter, you're consuming 100 kilowatts of energy to provide just 10 kilowatts of output power. That can relate to, at an average cost of 10 cents, which is the national average, about $80,000 a year in cost of electricity alone. That doesn't take into consideration the cost of the air conditioning and all the other costs that relate to maintaining a transmitter. If you could increase that efficiency from, let's say, 10% to 20%, you can cut your power bill by 50%, $40,000 a year. So there's obviously some real objective here to improve efficiency. Currently today, the standard transistor that is being used is known as a 50-volt LDMOS technology. It's available from a couple of manufacturers. And it provides, with optimized transmitter design, it provides efficiencies in the high 20s. With power supply efficiencies close to 100%, reduction in filter losses, combiner losses, improved correction techniques, you can push in a transmitter right now to around 29-30%. But it's pretty much stuck at the 30% barrier. New technologies that have come along recently, and I'll describe these a little bit later on, is Doherty modulation and a technology called drain modulation, or sometimes known as envelope tracking. And I will discuss those two in a little bit more detail at the end of the presentation. But to put everything into perspective, an IoT tube, an inductive output tube that's been designed for ATSC operation that operates with a multi-stage depressed collector can today make 60% efficiency. So we're a long, long way away from that in terms of solid-state technology. It's getting closer and closer every year, but still a long way to go. So just a quick sort of reference, if you are looking at a transmitter power level of 15, 20 or higher, the IoT technology is still significantly more efficient and cost-effective than a transistor technology. So we have a compromise between performance and efficiency when designing an amplifier, but the issue is, so why do we need to improve performance? Why do we need to get the signal-to-noise ratio as high as possible? The FCC and the ATSC determined that the standard measurement of the output of a transmitter should be 27 dB signal-to-noise ratio. That is assuming that there is no interference between the output of the transmitter and the input to the receiver, the off-air receiver. It doesn't take into consideration co-channel or adjacent channel interference from other TV stations. It doesn't take into consideration that the receiver itself has an equalizer to compensate for linear distortion, but actually generates white noise by doing so. It doesn't take into consideration the intermodulation and cross-modulation products. And it also doesn't take into consideration the fact that most people do not connect an antenna to their TV in a very good way, and it generates an enormous mismatch and obviously consequently generates signal-to-noise. And of course, if you're trying to reach that over-the-air TV set that's in the kitchen or in the garage or in the game room, that second or third TV set, there's going to be a significant amount of interference from unlicensed devices, everything from microwaves, remote controls, garage door openers, telephones. I even installed just recently, I installed a security camera, a wireless security camera on the front of my house. I was very pleased, very proud. It looked great. I had great remote control and so forth. Then I realized I had no Wi-Fi access in throughout my entire house, and some of my TV channels actually disappeared. So I now have a compromise between the security or actually watching TV, so I think I'm going to probably go with the TV side. There's a nice little TV that's available from RCA called a DMT270R. It's a mobile receiver as well as an ATSC legacy receiver. But one of the nice things I found about it, it has a really nice meter on the front of it when you press the actual enter button. This meter appears. It's on a scale of 0 to 100. And I wanted to determine what that meter actually was measuring. So I actually did some experiments to prove one particular point. I'd been to a couple of conventions and a couple of presentations, and I was getting the impression that people didn't understand the difference between nonlinear distortion and linear distortion. And there is a very, very big difference. Clearly, and needs to be understood, linear distortion that's caused by any amplitude phase errors that's potentially in a filter or a combiner can be compensated quite easily by the actual receiver. A receiver can compensate for up to 15, maybe even higher dBs of linear distortion. However, nonlinear distortion that's caused by amplifiers, pushing an amplifier into a much more saturated point, nonlinear distortion cannot be compensated by a receiver. And this test that I actually did, I set up a TV transmitter with a known fixed output, known losses and gains of antenna and cable, and a receiver, and made sure the actual output power always stayed at exactly the same level. And I changed the signal-to-noise ratio and then measured directly on the television itself, on the TV itself, the signal quality. And there was a clear correlation between signal quality, which is on the left-hand side, the vertical axis from 0 to 100, and the signal-to-noise, which goes from 38 dBs all the way down to the low teens. And as you can see, as I decreased the signal-to-noise ratio, the actual TV signal quality changed. And coincidentally, the 27 dBs is where it crossed over from good to okay. And at about 20 dBs, between 18 and 20 dBs, it went from okay to bad. What does actually that mean? It meant basically that at a good signal quality, a signal-to-noise ratio of greater than 36 dBs, I had 94% quality meter signal. And the signal was crisp and clear, no interference. As I reduced the signal-to-noise down to the low 20s, the TV signal quality meter went down to the 40% and lower, and actually, as you can see from this picture, the signal was breaking up. I mean, basically, the idea of this was to prove a simple fact that nonlinear distortion causes quality and causes reduction in coverage, which goes back to the fundamental compromise that as you push an amplifier to its more efficient point to try to save money, you actually compensate, it's a conflict towards the performance and ultimately coverage. I did the same test, of course, with linear distortion. It was a little harder to actually implement such an easy linear distortion, reducing the signal to noise from 38 down to 20s. But I did the same by actually adding in more and more filters, and it had absolutely no effect. The meter stayed at nearly 95% throughout the entire signal to noise. I actually went down to 20 dBs of signal to noise, and there was still no effect on the actual performance. Again, proving the difference between nonlinear and linear distortion. It's an important fundamental decision. So let's go back to linearization and, of course, that compromise between efficiency and linearity. The more you push an amplifier into its linear region, into its nonlinear region, the more efficient it becomes, but, of course, you compromise in linearity. And linearity, as I just mentioned, relates to coverage, potential coverage. The idea, of course, therefore, is to back off an amplifier to a more linear region. And the typical back off of an amplifier today is for ATSC operation is somewhere in the region of 8 dBs. 8 dBs on a standard class AB amplifier with an alpha of 1.22, that's the mathematical formula for gain, basically gives you an efficiency of that amplifier, just the amplifier, of around 22%. Which, when you take into consideration the losses in the filter, the losses in the combiner, cables, the consumption of the exciter, the consumption of fans, and so forth, you're now looking at efficiencies close to 17%. So this is somewhat a typical of what you would see today as most of most TV transmitters. So to summarize that basic discussion, again, the more you push an amplifier into its nonlinear part, the more efficient it becomes, which is good, but of course it generates more and more distortion. The bad distortion is the nonlinear distortion and the distortion that causes loss of coverage. So anybody who can keep the transmitter efficient and also at the same time keep the signal-to-noise ratio very good will obviously enjoy a much better and lower consumption, obviously a much better coverage, especially in interference-prone links. Now, in a perfect world where there is no interference, the signal-to-noise, due to nonlinearity distortion, has obviously less effect. The result often measured on a transmitter is measured with two methods, measuring the eye diagram and also measuring what's called the shoulders. These are the two fundamental measurements of a digital broadcast transmitter. This is a picture of before and after of an amplifier being pushed into saturation. It generates odd harmonics, and in particular the ones that are of most interest are the third harmonics because they appear on both sides of the actual carrier. So you can see the shoulders rise due to third harmonic distortion. The FCC ATSC recommended specification is 47 dBs. We, as a company, recommend a little bit more headroom than just sitting at 47. Ideally, 55 is the point where you should be looking for. And if we look at the same sort of diagram using the famous eye diagram, where you're looking at the size of the eyes, or more importantly, the crossover point of the 8 VSB, you can determine the unwanted to the wanted signal and determine signal-to-noise ratio. Now, signal-to-noise ratio, this is using both nonlinear and linear, and it's not so clear how distorted the top picture is with a 24 dB signal to noise. But if we move to this diagram, you can see that this is a nonlinear and linear distorted signal. And as you can see, you can barely see any eyes at all, and that's around 22 dB. So there's no way a TV receiver would be able to pick up the majority of those symbols. And of course, if you move to a much higher signal-to-noise ratio, you can get a really crisp crossover point on all of the points. So this is just a simple method of measurement. So the objective of a manufacturer is to improve efficiency, to help you save money, but also not compromise on signal quality. And there are three techniques that have been employed for some time, but these over the last couple of years have actually seen significant improvement. And that's digital predistortion using mathematical power amplifier modeling, crest factor reduction, and memory error correction. Digital predistortion using PA modeling is a basic fundamental system. You measure the output of the transmitter. The power amplifier has a distortion. It's normalized gain, input versus output. Obviously, at the low inputs, the gain is a little high, and at the high input power level, the gain is lower. You get this basic curve. And so all you do is simply generate a curve that's equal and opposite in both phase and amplitude, and you add it to the incoming signal. And of course, the output ideally will therefore be anomalized. You can improve this, and the improvements have been done recently by PA modeling. That's looking at the actual expected curve of an amplifier. All amplifiers pretty much have a standard characteristic. Those characteristics are determined by the transistor manufacturers, and you can generate a waveform without even knowing the output by just knowing what the characteristic is supposed to be. It basically follows what's called Voltaire's mathematical theory. You then look at that and actually just look at the difference between what you expect the waveform to be and what the actual waveform is. So the second technique, again, it's been around for some time, is crest factor reduction. Sometimes people call it clipping, in a sense. It's the peaks that cause the problem in an amplifier. It's not the average power. It's only the peaks that cause the odd harmonic distortion, in particular the third harmonic distortion. So if there was a way to reduce those peaks and then actually reinsert those peaks in a mathematical formula that allowed the peaks still to be there, you could actually lessen the effect of those peaks on the amplifier and, of course, reduce the actual distortion caused by those peaks. And that's what basically crest factor reduction is. It reduces the actual peak feeding into the amplifier, and if there's a clever way of actually reformulating that peak at the output, it can be done. And crest factor reduction can significantly improve third harmonic distortion simply because there is less energy at the peak power. The consequence, of course, unfortunately, though, is if you're changing the input signal, you have a desired to undesired ratio. Any signal at the output that was not at the input, or any change in the output that was not in the input, of course, is noise. And therefore, the signal-to-noise ratio increases. So you have a little compromise there. Your shoulders significantly improve, but your signal-to-noise ratio actually decreases. And therefore, a good engineer will try to balance those two items to get the optimum performance. The last technique that's being currently employed in TV transmitters is what's called memory error correction. And let me go to a graph. I've shown you this graph before. This is the normalized input amplitude versus the normalized gain. And that means as you increase the input, the gain of the amplifier changes. Pretty much every amplifier is about the same in terms of its characteristic. As you can see, it's got a higher gain as the input is low and a lower gain when the input is high. And simply generating an equal and opposite curve generates an output that's ideal and a perfect gain. The problem is that amplifiers have thermal characteristics. They have a memory. They're memorized. They're acting in the at one time different to another based on the input signal level. And therefore, if you could measure the gain at an instantaneous point, and we're talking in nanoseconds and microsecond time, you would actually see the gain is different to that of what the actual standard formula would be. And these dots symbolize typically what the actual instantaneous gain could be. And therefore, the real gain is not that nice straight line, but this sort of wiggly line that gives you less than ideal characteristics. So generating a curve that's equal and opposite to that one will actually significantly improve memory error correction. It will significantly improve the distortion caused by this amplifier. An MEC, memory error correction, can actually improve gain by up to 8-10 dBs over a non-thermally corrected amplifier. This technology actually is not invented by the broadcast industry. It's actually invented by the cellular industry. They wanted to improve transmission. They wanted to improve coverage when they were not allowed to increase power. So they developed this technology, and it's been now utilized by the broadcast industry. So to conclude in terms of the technology, in terms of what we're doing in improving efficiency, mathematical PA modeling has been improved and has significantly improved in the last few years. The addition of crest factor reduction and the addition of memory error correction has made a significant difference to IMD and signal to noise. Now, the whole point here is that if you can increase these, you can therefore push the amplifiers harder for the same signal to noise and IMD and ultimately make the transmitter more efficient. And that's what actually has happened in the last 5 to 6 years. We've seen an almost doubling in efficiency. We're now looking at efficiencies in the high 20s percent compared to in the early days of 10 to 14%. But we come to a sort of a barrier. 30% seems to be the brick wall. We cannot go beyond that with the correction techniques that we currently have. So we need to look at the next step. And that next step is actually changing the design, the fundamental design of the amplifier itself. There are two techniques that are being used and are being employed now in the broadcast industry. And one of them is called Doherty modulation, and one is called drain modulation. Can I have a show of hands of anybody who's heard of Doherty modulation? Good, good. Shows your age, unfortunately. Doherty basically is two amplifying devices, one operating in a Class AB characteristic and one operating in a Class C. The Class C just looks after the peaks, and the Class AB looks after the average power. You basically add those two signals together, and you have a much more efficient amplifier. Drain modulation, or envelope tracking as it's known, operates by varying the voltage on the actual FET itself, varying the voltage in conjunction directly related to the input signal. So let's talk briefly about those two technologies. So Doherty was invented by William Doherty, and as I said, this shows your age, because it was invented in 1934. So anybody around in 1934? By Bell Labs. Bell Labs had a sister company called Westinghouse, and Westinghouse manufactured radio transmitters, and radio transmitters actually utilized Doherty modulation. They had a very large vacuum tube that amplified the actual average power, and then a very small vacuum tube that amplified just the actual peaks of the signal. It significantly improves in linearity and dramatically improves, reduces power consumption for the same output power, so improves efficiency. And in the mid, I think it was 2005 was the initial development, but it was released in 2008 by NXP, which is a former member of the Philips group, released a new transistor called the BLF888. I think it's the BLF888A. That is actually optimized for Doherty operations. So these a pallet that uses two transistors that was previously used in a class AB operation now can be used in this Doherty configuration. So Doherty, as I mentioned, works with just two transistors, one operating in a normal mode and AB mode. And as you can see, it's linear for most of its characteristic, but as it reaches its saturation, the amplitude in PIN versus Pout drops off. So what you do is you actually have a second transistor that switches on, operates in class C, only switches on during the peaks. And of course, if you add those two together, you get a perfect linear characteristic. The circuit for Doherty modulation is very simple. It's two transistors, two amplifying devices working in parallel, fed from the same signal through two different impedance offsets. The signals are then amplified as one in class AB and one in class C, and then combined together with, again, an impedance matching transformer. Unfortunately, like in life, there is no such thing as a free lunch. With all this improvement in efficiency, with this all improvement of reduction in heat and so forth, you have this output transformer that combines the two signals. That transformer, of course, is frequency dependent. And therefore, that frequency dependent limits the bandwidth of the actual amplifier. In a UHF operation, you can typically get 4 to 5 channels per transformer. And obviously, as you move away from the maximum transformer match, you reduce its efficiency. So the conclusion is that Doherty modulation can give you significant improvement in efficiency, but of course it's band limited. It will not work across the entire UHF band. However, if you look at the life from a different view, if Mr. Jenikowski has his way, we won't need broadband amplifiers anyway, because we'll only have one channel. If that doesn't happen, and let's hope it doesn't happen, we do have a limitation here. Now, there are ways of getting around that, of course. Simply modifying the transformer, having a transformer for each 5 channels, for instance. So Thompson actually has developed a method of doing that, so it's relatively easy to change channel. I'll talk about that a little bit later. The consequence, the result, is a big deal in terms of temperature. If you look at the bottom picture, this is the thermal picture of the operating transistors at running at 500 watts, the total chassis. So the lower picture is a standard dual class AB transistors, and they're operating around 75 degrees Celsius. The upper picture has two different, in a sense, colors. You notice on the left-hand side, it's much hotter than the right-hand side. The left-hand side is the class AB. The right-hand side is the class C. The average temperature is 22% less. So what does that mean? It means that there's less cooling required because you now have to have a lot less flow. The transistors are operating 10, 15 degrees lower, and for every degree lower that they operate, there's significant improvement in life of those transistors. So we're seeing increased reliability, we're seeing decreased airflow and fan requirement, and of course, the less heat that goes into the room, the less air conditioning, and of course, savings can be seen there as well. Now we can look at the other technology, the second technology that's being currently employed. And by the way, I'm not biased between each one. I am personally biased, but in terms of a corporate view, we manufacture both technologies. We manufacture drain technology and we manufacture Doherty modulation technology. Drain modulation, or envelope tracking, is basically a method. If you look at a waveform, and you can look at the waveform here, the varying output, the blue is the output waveform, the red is the total consumed power. The red line does not change because the voltage and the current are always constant. Therefore, the red area is the completely total wasted energy in a signal. And as I mentioned earlier, if you're running 10% efficiency, that red area can be 90 kilowatts. In a 10 kilowatt transmitter. So a new technology called drain modulation has been developed where it takes a sample of the input signal, feeds it through an envelope detector, which feeds a DC to DC converter. And that DC to DC converter now varies the actual power supply so that the actual gain, so the actual consumption, follows the actual input. And as you can see, in an ideal world, you could almost make this transmitter 100% efficient. In other words, you only provide the voltage and current that is actually required for the maximum output. We're a long way away from 100% efficiency, obviously, for the moment. And again, as I mentioned with Doherty, there is no such thing as a free lunch. With this comes a far more complicated and complex structure. You're varying of power supply at a very fast rate, which means inductances and capacitances are very, very sensitive. And therefore, lead lengths and cables and so forth are also very sensitive. You also require a lot more components. So with that, as you increase the number of components in any system, you decrease its mean time between failure. Looking at the same drawing, same picture, you see that the drain modulation has a temperature of all the transistors involved has a temperature of less than 59 degrees compared to the standard dual class AB of 75 degrees. And that sees a 20% reduction in temperature. Now, it's not as good as Doherty on an average, but the one nice thing is that all of the transistors in this amplifier are the same temperature. Therefore, the airflow can be equal throughout the actual chassis of the amplifier. So although you don't see such a big reduction in temperature, you are seeing a nicer, more even airflow and temperature rise. So a quick summary of the three technologies, the standard fixed drain modulation, and Doherty modulation. And I've tried to summarize this, and just want to put things, this is subjective. A lot of people find, you know, certain items, certain issues more important than others. Efficiency, obviously, is clearly the reason why we're doing these developments. And as you can see, both Doherty and drain modulation currently have, you know, significantly improved efficiencies for operating transmitters than the actual fixed drain technology. As I mentioned before, Doherty is not broadband. We've developed a technology that allows you to change channel at about 30 minutes per kilowatt. So if you have a 1 kilowatt transmitter, you should be able to change the channel within less than 30 minutes. And by the way, I'm saying that I actually have done this personally. So I know it can be done. It's just a matter of simple two solder joints and two screws to actually change the channel. But fixed drain and drain modulation works on a fundamental class A operation, so therefore they are broadband. In terms of reliability, because Doherty and drain are significantly operating at a significantly lower temperature, there obviously is bound to be improvements in reliability. It's without a doubt. But of course, because Doherty has far fewer components than drain modulation, that should relate in some way to reliability. Complexity, of course, the fixed drain and the Doherty are the same. Very little difference between those, and so they're not very complex. The drain modulation has a lot more complicated circuits and components that relate directly to the operation of the transistor. The transistor, they have to be close to the transistor, and therefore they're actually in the heated area of the actual amplifier. And of course, that can ultimately have an effect on long-term reliability. Flexibility and active redundancy, and of course, performance at reduced power are three other issues. One of the things with Doherty that I didn't mention, as you reduce the power of the transmitter, if you buy a 10 kilowatt transmitter and operate it at 6 kilowatts, for instance, obviously the amplifier is not being pushed into saturation. And therefore, the class C has no effect, and the efficiency drops off. And the same is not true with class A, B, or fixed drain. So you do see a little bit improvement of efficiency at reduced power. In terms of redundancy, as you can imagine, if one of the transistors fails, a class C amplifier fails, obviously the class A, B has no effect, and so the actual MTBF is reduced. Overall, they're all relatively similar. It's a matter of choice. It's a matter of what your preference is. My personal preference, if if you're interested, is the Doherty modulation, because I believe simplicity is the way to go. It's a far simpler design, it's a far simpler integration, and of course it means repairing it is a lot easier if ever that happens and is necessary. The last slide basically tries to summarize what it really means in cost. And I just did a quick calculation and based it on four different types of technology. The old 32-volt transistors, which was developed around the year 2000, which was mostly available during the implementation of digital TV. A 50-volt basic system without digital pre-correction. A 50-volt system which has the advanced digital pre-distortion systems that are currently available. And of course, the latest designs using Doherty or drain modulation. I compared them at 10 kilowatts, determined standard efficiencies and very conservative efficiencies of the actual amplifiers, and determined the comparison of consumptions. So best to worst case, that means that a drain or Doherty modulation transmitter compared to the old 32-volt style can save you up to $30,000 a year. That's based on fundamental costs and operating criteria. If you compare it to the latest technology, it still can save you up to between $5,000 and $6,000, and compared to earlier 50-volt versions, around $20,000. So at the end of the day, if you have a 10-year-old transmitter and you replaced it with the latest technologies for Doherty or drain modulation, you can save around $144,000 over a five-year period, which relates somewhere to a significant part of the actual initial and capital cost of the transmitter. So, looking at a summary and the last slide, really it's the last slide, our objective was to improve efficiency without compromising performance, and we've manufactured a transmitter that has, we believe, significant improved reliability characteristics due to the fact that it's operating at a much lower temperature. So if you're looking at a new solid-state transmitter, one of the things, three of the things you really need to look for is efficiency, and ultimately that relates to cost savings, and that's something you can take to the general manager. Operating temperature, which relates to simply reliability. The cooler a transmitter operates, I can guarantee you the longer it will run. And a definitive SNR and IMD. And I'm suggesting, a personal suggestion known based on my experience of measuring literally hundreds of transmitters around the country, an SNR of greater than 32, ideally 35, is what you should be targeting, and shoulders of greater than 53 to 55 dBs, because that gives you plenty of headroom for thermal changes. Okay, it wouldn't be a presentation by a salesman unless you actually had a sales pitch, so here it is. We've just released a new product called the MTV8000. It's 1 kilowatt to 20 kilowatts, and it employs Doherty modulation. So obviously all the characteristics I mentioned earlier are apparent. And there it is. So if you have any questions, I will be available at the end of the presentation to answer those. And thank you very much for waking up so early and coming here and listening to me. And I appreciate you very much indeed. Thank you very much indeed. Are there any questions? Yes, sir.
Can you comment on the correlation between the signal to noise reading and the VSWR on an antenna system?
Yeah, I can. Obviously, I don't know the mathematical formula off the top of my head, but clearly, as you increase VSWR, obviously the match is changing, and if the match is changing, then the SNR is decreasing. So the better the actual match, the less signal-to-noise ratio. That's a big effect, because when you measure the signal-to-noise on your transmitter, you're measuring right at the output of the filter, and it doesn't take into consideration the transmission line or the antenna. And if they're not matched well, then that is going to degrade coverage because of the signal-to-noise ratio. Okay. Thank you very much indeed. Again, thank you.